Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. Well, today I felt like what it feels like to be a minority, being an educationist among scientists, but at the same time, really appreciate this particular forum for bridging the gap between education and science. Well, in my presentation, I'll focus on the growing interest by governments in using science for economic recovery, and in particular, engineering science. We heard this morning, too, from William Colglazier about governments using science for economic recovery. The other issue that I would look at is the increasing interest by governments to steer policy in science and to steer science activities within countries and beyond countries. We notice that governments are pushing the science agenda in and at the education institutions. This, of course, poses challenges for higher education as a sector in terms of making use of those opportunities that are being created. I'll try to make my presentation short, and I hope I don't lose the trend in which I had prepared it in. Well, start by mentioning and acknowledging the fact that the 21st century ushered new challenges to society, more so for sustainable development, as we have heard all morning. And for me, a newspaper article caught my attention when it asked the question as to who will feed the 7th billion baby. A simple question like that raises a lot of questions. We know that the resources to provide for this population explosion do not match the growth rate, as we also had today in the plenary session in the morning by Johanna Rockstem. And there is a gradual rift being created between those who have access or do not have access to the world's resources, and the gap is widening. We have just experienced the Arab Spring and now the Occupy Wall Street movement. Resources, broadly defined, include both natural resources and other resources, such as employment, housing, and health services. These challenges are a result of changing demographics that also play a role in expanding urbanization and use of land for homes and less for food production. We know that science has made its contribution towards the world's growing population and now has a substantial role to play in providing solutions for sustainability. Higher education as a sector has not escaped the impact of globalization and its role in addressing some of those challenges. Some of the higher education institutions, looking at them, have responded positively to some of those challenges that the 21st century gives rise to. They are looking at statistical data, sufficient scholarship that points to the direct implication of the knowledge economy for higher education. Sorry, this has nothing to do with, oh, I thought it's showing there. It's not what I'm trying to do there. Scholarship points to the direct implication of the knowledge economy for higher education institutions in terms of the sector's role in human capital development, in the ways research is conducted, the amount of knowledge produced, and the policies that govern such activities. Higher education as a sector contributes, as we know, to human capital by nurturing those young scientists, giving them a head start, and pointing them in the right direction as they develop new research agendas for addressing global development issues. As a result of that, what we see is an emerging trend where countries trying to emerge out of the fluctuating economic crisis are continuously starting to focus more and more on science and ways to use it for economic recovery and innovation, entrepreneurship, and the use of science to address global problems. Governments are looking at expanding and growing student numbers in particular, as well as diversifying those who have access to science education to harness all potential human resources for sustainability. What is noticeable in the higher education sector is that the numbers of students interested in science is also growing, and the demographics of those in the science programs are also changing. For example, there is an increase in the number of students from minority groups, and students, women students, and students from the lower socioeconomic sector. A notable trend too, which is pleasing, is that with the increase of women registering and in the science programs, they are actually graduating from those science programs. Another trend is that of that has come with increased student mobility. Students are moving and studying away from home. And as they study from home, there's evidence that most of them choose to stay in the countries where they're studying. The challenge for institutions then is to address that brain drain challenge for the benefit of all. It is impossible to stop students from moving and staying where they like, but how, from the higher education sector, can we work or develop strategies that would make all of us benefit from that? We know in the past in which programs have been used successfully, such as the one that I would mention, located at the University of Cape Town in South Africa, which is an 8-country network known as the University Science, Humanities and Engineering Partnership in Africa. It is aimed at building capacity amongst the partner countries, exposing scholars to research and study in different countries with a commitment to return to their home countries and earn their degrees there. An old model that has been used successfully. What I would argue for is looking at the mode of operation today, which is more of operating within networks, is to look for solutions too that could make countries share the expertise and the brains that are circulating within those networks, and making sure that scholars from the developing countries are included in the networks, the international networks that have emerged. Let me return to the point I made about the increase in student numbers. Post-admission, the debate shifts. We have those students in the higher education sector. Now, what is it that is changing that we are really imparting to them or so? What should be taught to those students in order to equip them with skills from various disciplines rather than single discipline skills? For example, finding ways to integrate science with business skills in training future innovators. There is growing realization that entrepreneurs need the same skills imparted to scientists to promote creativity and innovation, and that scientists need management and entrepreneurial skills. These arguments have implications for the curriculum reform in higher education, which were not taken seriously. Let me return to the point again on economic recovery and innovation using science for recovery. In the last few years, the world has experienced a serious economic downturn, as we know, and there are countries and cities that are looking at science for the answers. The example that I want to share with you is of one city and of one country that have opted to use science, in particular engineering, for economic stimulation and development. New York City, the city where I work, feels like a country sometimes, has decided to focus on the applied sciences as a critical component for the city's economic development strategy. They have the New York City Economic Development Corporation, which recently announced an applied science initiative to use science as a stimulant for economic activity. It issued a request for proposals globally, not just in the US, for institutions to bid for the establishment of the state-of-the-art graduate applied science engineering campus in the city. The goal being to flood the city with science activities that would lead to job creation, development, and stimulate innovation and commercialization in the same way that technology did in the Silicon Valley and San Francisco. The other area that I want to mention is science education being used for development, which I have seen an example of that in Ethiopia, where the country embarked on a major science engineering project, capacity building project, also as a way of trying to flood the country with engineers with the hope that it will lead to stimulation, job creation, and development in the country. Let me see. The other area that I wanted to sort of mention, being signaled that I don't have much time, is, okay, I'll get to it. I have to page through. The increased governance by increased governance in science activities or so, where governments feel the need to coordinate more and more science activities that are happening or so. And we have seen that trend emerging in the US, where government announced major funding for science education and wanting also to flood higher education with scientists, where Obama announced at one point as part of the recovery a major funding into higher education and into science education, calling for higher education institutions to start graduating something like 10,000 science graduates, particularly engineering also in per year, as well as a goal to train something like 100,000 science and technology teachers in the next 5 years or so. So I would say coordination of science activities across government departments is also an emerging trend that impacts on higher education, because looking at education, they're looking at it as one sector, looking at the ministries of science and technology, looking at the ministries of trade and industry, and trying to coordinate what is happening in the different government departments has been a strategy that governments are using. The last one that I want to mention is with the budget crisis and the interest in science at the same time, we have observed a trend where governments are either cutting back on spending in research and development or increasing funding. And in instances where they're increasing funding, they're also increasing control. And we recently witnessed that in places like Turkey, where we know in Turkey the government had increased funding for research and development and recently announced the strong hand in steering what happens in the Turkish Academy of Science or so. So there are general concerns in the higher education sector over autonomy in science research, autonomy being eroded as funding sources are diversifying. Diversifying with the private sector having a share in research funding, but also in dictating the agenda for research in higher education. And this poses a challenge that higher education is currently dealing with. Lastly, there is a point that was raised in the morning about the fact that we need global solutions for global problems, and exciting initiatives that have been mentioned, examples that have been given. And I would say, with regard to that, the challenge for higher education is to take advantage of those opportunities that are being created in the training of students, in the teaching, in creating new agendas also, and capitalizing on that. Thank you.